everyone. Welcome to Teenage Dirtbags Podcast. This is a fresh new episode coming at you. We are doing this, we are field reporting today. We are out of our home country and we are actually having a very special guest on today. My name is Maddie.
I'm Carly, and we are reporting from Venice Beach.
We sure are.
And we have a very, very special guest with us today. You may know her as the director of some films like 13, Lords of Dogtown, a little movie called Twilight.
Tiny little underground movie you may not have heard.
Mafia Mama. I mean, the list goes on and on. So thank you so much for meeting with us, Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine Hardwick.
Hey, no.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even say your name. Yeah. Catherine Hardwick.
It's okay. It's just the Catherine.
Energy, too. Okay.
Yeah.
It's no yeah, big deal. Thank you guys for coming. This is so fun.
Thank you for having us. We're sitting in Catherine's incredible office. That is just a museum of everything you've worked on. Is that fair to say? I think everything you've ever worked on is...
There's probably some little trinket from everything.
Yeah, yeah, it's genuinely a museum. Like, you could start charging admission.
Yeah, seriously.
And people could just come.
How do you know that I don't?
You should.
You haven't left yet.
We haven't. That's yeah, that's true. We haven't been billed yet. Because it's... I'm just seeing little pieces of every little thing that... I grew up watching some of the cases like 13, for example, yeah. Which I want to go on about forever. But it's really
are any of these skateboards, and I'm staring at on your wall, are any of them from Lords of Dogtown?
Yeah, well, they were the some of the actors, like the one on the second from the left. That's one of the actors, yeah. His own board, and he plays. He's one of the Skactors in Lords of Dogtown.
Oh, cool.
Now, the radical thing is on the left. Is a skateboard from a Josh Brolin skateboard movie called Thrashin'. Oh. So that is really going in the Wayback Machine.
Yes.
That is vintage.
My God. It's yeah. really, it's just, there's just something, I keep looking and noticing new things that I yeah. want to talk about. let's start really quickly on, as you may or may not know, we talk about a lot of our teenage years. And I want to hear a bit about where you grew up, how you grew up, how you were as a teenager. And I want to know how that made you who you are today. So where did you grow up? Where did you come from?
In fact, strangely enough, the wall right behind you is all about where I grew up and some pictures of me as a teenager on it because I want to make a little animated film about my dad. But I grew up in South Texas, right on the Rio Grande River on the border of Mexico. So you can see, like in some of the photos, my family is on a boat, and behind us is Mexico. And we used to swim across the Rio Grande River, go to Mexico, sneak around, run around the cornfields, and then swim back across. You know, so we had kind of a Wild West childhood. Like, we would have rope swings and mud baths, and we built this funky house out of 100-year-old lumber and would jump off the balconies, and we had a ski boat, and you would ski back there, and you'd get a tractor tire inner tube, and your brother would try to make you fall in the dead cow carcass that was sliding down the river. So our extreme sports were actually pretty extreme.
Did you have siblings?
Yeah, I got my brother and my sister, and we were all kind of like wild, sort of like wild hooligans, making little fires. You see me and my sister, and rope swings and everything.
Where are you in the age?
I'm the oldest, but each of us are only a year and a half apart, so kind of all of us were all teenagers at the same time, which meant trouble for the parents when you've got like three teenagers in the house. Right.
Your poor parents. Yeah. Yeah, oh, no my kidding. God.
They even would have like some, mom tried to have a sign-in sheet for, okay, what time did you come in? Like, I got in at midnight and signed your name. Of course, that lasted 5 minutes. We would write Mickey Mouse, you know. And
yeah.
She's like, if I wake up in the middle of the night, I want to see if you guys are there. And, you know, we're like, Mom, just give it up.
Yeah.
Know? Let it go.
Were they strict? Oh.
No.
Hello.
That's okay.
Were they strict? No.
I'm just going to keep recording, unless it's private conversation.
I'm not going to record.
Mom wanted to be a little bit more tight-reined on the discipline, but my dad was very creative. Like, he was kind of a wild child, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I want to do this little short film on him. But, you know, he was very creative. Like, if he heard about hippies, yeah. then he would dress up like a hippie. If he heard about punks, he would dress up like a punk.
What did your parents do?
Well, you know, a little town in South Texas. My dad was a farmer. My mom was a school teacher. So very traditional, but dad really did think out of the box, yes. I gotta say.
So, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. Because obviously that's something that you got from him, thinking outside of the box and trying
and
new things.
That painting is my sister's painting. My
what?
Sister
that one?
Is fully a full-on painter.
That's gorgeous.
She's like Irene Hardwick Olivieri. She's just a wild painter. Like, I use her color palettes for every movie. Like, I pick one of her paintings, and then we give that to the art department and say, you can only use colors that are here because she has a beautiful sense of look at the color.
That is amazing. Yeah. Did you do that when you were, well, I don't want to get too much ahead, but did you do that when you were a production designer and doing that as well? You used her.
I always did. You know,
that is amazing.
Because I really have very similar, I love the colors she uses. So mm-hmm. I can almost always pick a painting of hers and go, okay, this is the palette for
that's
act
awesome.
One or act two of the movie.
And is she still in Texas? Or?
She lives in New Mexico right now in Santa Fe, which is, you know, a big art center. There's more galleries in Santa Fe than anywhere in the U.S. except for New York.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And so, it's very happening art planet, you know.
That's awesome.
Really cool. Yeah,
that's really amazing that you can bring your family in to your work.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Her paintings are in 13. You'll see in Lords of Dogtown. You'll see paintings of hers.
Oh my god!
I love that.
Oh, that is amazing. Okay, so you guys had quite an adventurous childhood and teenage.
Yeah, it sounds
years,
like it was like a Swiss Family Robinson.
It was, and then there's the other side, like. you know, getting in trouble side. When you cross the border to Mexico, there's the border town where you could go to a bar if you're 12 years old and you could just go wild dancing and drink, you know, whatever. So like you would, they were trying, it was called Reynosa is our border town, and they were trying to crack down so that the teenagers, because you would usually like go to the prom, get your picture taken, and then you would leave 1 minute later and just go to Reynosa, clubs, Club Alaska, Aire Acondicionado, you know, air conditioning and whatever. And so you'd go over to these crazy clubs. And then, so the McAllen, you know, mayor tried to get the Reynosa mayor, don't let the kids just come into these clubs underage. Please check for IDs. I remember one time I took a Girl Scout ID and said, you have to be 18 to have this. And they let me in. And, you know, so it was pretty.
Oh,
was it like it was good fun or was it kind of dangerous?
I know, it was fun. Like, it was wild.
Yeah.
You know, like there would be like limbo contest and, you know, and dance contest, you know, just crazy. But it was kind of raucous and you just run all around these streets. And then my brother would get in trouble. You know, he would see his girlfriend talking to some guy. He went up and punched the guy. The guy broke a Coke bottle over his head. They had to leave. All the windows of the car got, you know, like his ears hanging half off. You know, like everything happened there.
I have to say, this makes me, like, I have two kids, and this makes me want, like, 10 more and just have them be like wild and like it's that this sounds exciting to me. I had an amazing childhood. I'm not saying I had
your only child,
but I'm an only child, so I didn't have that like camaraderie between my siblings, and that's what makes me want to have
a
kids
where
more. There's where they're like I want them to defy what I like. I want them to sneak out. I want them to do silly
like
things,
a little crew.
Yeah, 100%. So this is making me really excited for my kids to grow up. But that's so cool.
Do you
cool.
look back fondly on your childhood and your teen years?
Oh, surely.
I mean, it was cool and wild. And then my dad, you know, since we didn't have any snow, it's very hot. It's like at the bottom of Texas. So the last day of school, he would pile us in the car. We'd drive up to Colorado, Rocky Mountains. Then we were on a almost like a military regime. Day one, you're getting acclimated to the altitude. We'll just do a 7 mile hike straight up the mountain.
Then
day two, we're ready for a 15, you know, and you're
my Lord.
And we're like climbing, you can see me and my sister
climbing
mountains and, you know, like we made it. So it's in a way it was kind of an empowering childhood because, you know, we had to climb these crazy mountains. That weird house that looks all rickety, I got to build one whole wall of that when I was 11. Like Dad said, you're going to build that wall. It's all recycled lumber.
Yeah.
And so, like, your 11-year-old girl, you built a wall.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Pretty impactful. It wasn't just like, okay, I was looking at my phone. No, I, like, had a freaking hammer. And
that probably had an effect on you being a production designer.
I became an architect and a production designer.
Well, so is that, what did you want to be when you were younger? What did you know you wanted to work in something creative, I would imagine, but...
I don't think I was that aware.
Right, okay.
I was like swinging up, off the ropes and everything. And, you know, like the film business really was not anything I ever thought of because it's a very small town where I'm from. And we had one theater, but it mostly showed like Spanish language films or something. You know, it had some Clint Eastwood back in the day, like the Westerns.
Okay? Right.
But that's about it. It wasn't like, I didn't grow up in a movie culture.
Right.
I never in a million years would have thought that you could be, you know, a filmmaker. That was like crazy. And also, we didn't have the Toronto Film Festival in our And then same thing, like there really, you didn't really know any artist. Or I remember one time, like I heard this lady was, when I was like, 14 was an artist, and you're like, what? I mean, can you make a living? You know, so it was fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And so you said that you, I didn't know this, that you started out as architect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened was my family was pretty poor because if you think about it, farming, I don't know if you guys know, but some years you can do everything you write. You planted the seed, you took care of the things, and then you have a hurricane, you know, or a storm, or all the insects take out your crop, or everybody in the world has onions, so they're not worth anything. So, you know, you have a lot of lean years where you got no money.
Sure.
So, but we had a friend that was quite wealthy. They had the oil, they had the Coca-Cola distillery or whatever. And so they said, well, why doesn't Catherine come with our son, and we're going to go up to this research institute where they test people called the Johnson O'Connor Research Laboratory, and they decide, they help figure out like what you would be good at, like what are your aptitudes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, it's kind of hot in here, should I put the AC on?
I'm okay,
I'm fine.
So anyway, they said, let's go up to the Johnson O'Connor Research Laboratory, and then you get individually tested for 2 days, like one-on-one, for all these
for
things.
2 days?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's intensive.
Scary. And then they use the data to help understand how genetic abilities are traced. You know, so you're part of an ongoing experiment.
Wow.
You know, like from your mom to your kid, you know, if she's good in math, the kids, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So anyway, at the end they told me that I should be an engineer. I was like, what the hell? I said, that sounds terrible, you know.
Yeah.
And then I said, what's my number two? They said, architecture. They said, you're very high in memory for design, very creative. Like anytime we gave you a symbol and you were supposed to put your reaction to it, you never gave any of the choice that anyone else ever did.
Yeah.
And, you know, certain things and visual. And then I was strong in structural visualization.
Yeah.
That I could preconceive what something would be. And I'm like, that sounds neat. Okay. I didn't know barely what architecture was.
Sure.
My hometown looks like a dump. Okay. And so I'm like, why not? You know, what the hell? So I went to architecture school, loved it. And they were absolutely right about me. I was just crazy. I was good at it. I just had the skill set. I wouldn't have known it, though, if I had taken that test. You know, and I was just like drawing stuff. I'd always drawn a lot since I was a little kid. And my sister always drew. And then my dad really should have been an architect. He was pretty talented, too. But anyway, so I just loved architecture, went to architecture school, University of Texas. And at the end, my senior project, after 5 years, I dressed up like my building. I had different layers, this and that. And this is green and brown by the earth and green and then blue by the sky and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And, you know, I had all these presentations and a party when the building would open and all solar energy and everything. And the teacher and everybody at the end was like, what? I had a dragon collecting the rainwater, spitting it out into the pool.
That's awesome.
They
were
just in absolute shock. And everybody's usually they criticize you in the juries of your peers and all the visiting architects. And then mine, nobody said anything. They were just like, you have to charge money to go to that building. And I was, and I'm like, oh my God, what does this mean? I just worked for 5 years. And then the one of the visiting professors from the East Coast, who's now big, and you know, one of the architects that did the High Line, you know,
and
all that stuff. So they, he said, come to my house. You're going to show all your stuff to myself and my wife, and we're going to tell you what we think you should do with your life. I'm like,
okay.
And then I'm like, I just spent 5 years busting my butt architecture school. And he said, we think you're too creative to be an architect. I'm like, gee, thanks. And they said, they're going to kind of try to like tamp you down, like design. Vince, it has to pass City Hall and all this stuff. And so I was kind of depressed. Like, they said, you need to find something more creative, because a lot of architecture, there is some really creative architecture now, but that's one out of like a zillion that actually get built or whatever. You know. Anyway, so then I was already designing a project in South Texas in my hometown. I was already building it. So at 21, I built 120 houses, townhouses.
At 21.
That's when I started, yeah.
That's
started
until
21 to 24.
Oh, hello. Kitty.
This is Squeaky. I call him Squeaky.
I can see why.
Pre as in Grand Prix. Come here, Squeaky. Meow. See,
Squeaky.
He's very tough. Like a
I hope the microphones are picking that up. That's so, what a noise.
But he's usually like a little badass panther, and as he goes out and kills rats, but he's got a baby voice, so I'm like, he tricks him. Yeah, you know?
He's like, I'm sweet. That 21, you were doing that. Oh my god,
it was kind of scary. You know, because I had to I had to be responsible for a lot of stuff. I didn't realize architecture school, you know, it's just fun, fun, fun.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I had to really. I saw bulldozers making the streets in the design that I put, because I designed the streets, all solar energy, all the passive solar energy. So it was very, you know, it was kind of intense, you know, like nothing I had designed had ever been built, not even a doghouse. So, you know, after I've been, and I have cool pictures of that project and everything, it's still there. People live there, multi-generations. We put a 3-acre lake in, recycled water. I mean, it's absolutely wild, actually. But then I'm like, I've got to, you know, I can't do this, because people just wanted me to do the same thing over and over. Yeah. And I thought that the film business would encourage creativity.
Right.
I thought that. Okay, so I thought, I'm going to go to Hollywood. Yeah. I did not know about sequels, IP, all that stuff. I thought it was just like, you get to do wild stuff.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, I get to build spacecraft, or, you know, who knows. So I came out here, and I got into UCLA Film School in Animation, graduate school.
Oh. Okay.
And so that was really cool, and animating.
Yeah.
And so all my drawings, you know, I made a little animated film. It went all over the United States. It won, like, an award and all this stuff. So I'm like, wow. But then you could only get a job as an animator if you were working in a big corporation like Disney. Right. I had no money. So I had to get some jobs that would pay the bills. So that's why I started working as a production designer, because people said, hey, you're an architect. Yeah. Maybe you can be a production
designer. Set design, all that stuff. Yeah.
I had already built stuff for real and made sculptures and everything. So I got my first job as on that skateboard movie, Thrashin'. Yeah. Josh Brolin's the star. And, you know, the budget, total budget for the art department was like $6,000.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So, like, it's me and this other dude. I'm like, well, I guess we better try to get free skateboards. And then I'd see the other dude would be selling skateboards that we had gotten for free at the back of the truck, and selling drugs. I'm like, like, 1,000 crazy, outrageous bad things happened on that movie. But, you know,
was Josh Brolin like a no name at the time, or?
I think he was like up and coming. Okay. Because his dad was a famous actor. Sure. Is too. So I think he was probably his earliest movies.
And that was that with Richard Linklater, or is that a different one?
No, this is one. This was with a wacky, very wacky director that was in one of the dancers in West Side Story, but he was a bit sketchy by this time.
Okay.
You know, Very sketchy. Yeah. But but anyway, we survived. But I mean, I didn't know anything. I had barely just moved to LA, so they sent me down to the boardwalk of Venice Beach to do graffiti, right? And so I got these two kids from a graffiti program, these two African-American kids that were like 12 years old that did graffiti in Midtown LA. And I picked them up in my car and we went to do the graffiti. Little did I know, like we were painting over serious gang graffiti. Oh. The gang members, V13, came down there like, what the hell are you guys doing? Me and two little kids, I'm like, oh, we're making a movie.
We're making a movie.
And they're like, we're going to get you guys. And we're like, we better, they look kind of mean. We better get out. So the next day we came back and I called the production, dude, you might need to put security because they seemed like they didn't like what we were doing.
Yeah.
Next day we came back. It was rollers with black paint and like mean things about me and the kid, you know. So we were like, whoa.
Oh, my.
Then that was like one little like, welcome to LA. Then another thing was they're like, okay, we got this house for rent. It's going to be the bad guy's house because there were these daggers.
Yeah.
Right.
The daggers were the bad skateboard guy.
Yeah.
It's going to be their house. It's in Hollywood. Go down there and decorate it. You know, it's kind of messy now. I'm like, okay, dee-dee-dee-dee. I go in there to decorate it just by myself. There was no crew or
no
whatever.
Team, right.
It was a full-on crack house with crack heads in it and like residue crack on the coffee table. But I didn't really know much about drugs, so I was like, hey, what's going on? This table looks kind of crunchy. I'm like, could you help me clean? Like, full-on crackheads. Can you help me clean
Let's
this
scrub
up?
Together.
Yeah, I'll give you $10. Go get a scrub. Yeah. So that was the kind of shit I was doing. I'm like, so naive. I didn't even know better, you know. So like, so.
But, yeah, it also seems like you can make friends with anybody.
Well,
apparently.
I tried.
Apparently, I can see that.
I was like, okay, well, not really with the gang member.
They well, no, right. that yeah, one didn't work out.
I'm sure you could have, like, well, you know,
you
won their
won
hearts.
Over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but anyway, like, so that was like low budget, non-union, naive, just do whatever, you know. That was hilarious, yeah.
And so you production design for how long? How many years did you do that?
So I would say that was the first movie, which was in the late 80s, I believe. And then up until, I mean, I didn't get to direct until 2003 is when.
Oh, we know. And I can't wait to talk about it. I cannot wait.
So I did all that time, you know, which was really cool.
It's 15, 20 years or so, I guess.
Something like that. So all the, you know, I kind of worked my way up from a zero budget, $6,000 to build ramps and everything, skateboard ramps, to, you know, a little more money the next one, without any connections. I didn't really know any.
Right.
I did not know anybody here. Actually, the only person I knew in L.A., I had met him one time, and he was an assistant manager in a McDonald's. That's the only Mike Pick connection. I was like, woo!
Assistant manager in McDonald's.
I saw him one time when I came here, and I went to a McDonald's employee party where they did nonstop McDonald's jingles. I was like,
oh,
I don't think I'll be hanging out with this dude.
Yeah, that sounds a little.
Yeah, that was a bit sketchy. But anyway, so, you know, that was just by hook or crook, just scrappy, just.
Right.
Trying to get any job you could get and just meeting people and just doing, and I got to work for Tim Burton, which was really cool.
Okay.
I got to make little sculptures for him.
What
just
film?
Meet him and one of, well, he did one called Frankenweenie.
I know Frankenweenie.
He did one before that, Hansel and Gretel, with Japanese kids. I did little stuff for that.
Cool.
So it was just very special.
He
was just starting out too.
Cool.
I just want to say something before we get into your directing, which I want to talk about next. I just want to really quickly, because you said Tim Burton, and I know that. So I grew up almost immediately at some point in my childhood knowing I wanted to work in film and TV. Didn't know what, but I knew I wanted to do something.
Right.
And as I got a little older in my teenage years, and I discovered, you know, because when you first see a movie, you don't necessarily know at first who the director is, who the producer is, who the production, you know, the actors. That's kind of how it gets sold, right?
Yeah.
So when I found out more about the cinematographer and the director, I realized I want to direct.
Yeah.
And I discovered Tim Burton. And the amount of projects I did about him in high school is alarming. Like, my teachers were like, okay, Like I was, yeah, like I was not, truly number one Tim Burton fan. And then, and unfortunately, and this is how I'm going to get into your thing right now, is unfortunately, and I think the case is still sort of similar today, but not as much. A lot of the directors we knew were men.
Yeah.
And then, and still are, but it was more popular. And then 2003 came out.
Yeah.
Came by. And a little movie that was your first directing movie.
Yeah.
Called 13 came out. And I was 13?
We were both 13.
Yeah. So I was that age.
We remember like the trailers and stuff being on TV, and it was like such a scandal.
It was
like,
so scandal.
Parents were like, should we let our kids see this? Yeah. It was like such a big deal if you were allowed to see 13.
And I remember watching it. I know. I remember watching it, and I couldn't tell you exactly what age. I was probably 13 or maybe 14.
Well, it just turned 20 this year.
It sure did, which is so insane.
That makes sense, but that we were 13.
When I watched it, and I remember, you know, we watched a movie, and then you find out that it's a female director. I remember being like, oh shit, I can do this. Like, this is something that
she did it, I can do it. Yeah.
I mean, not like, oh,
yes,
I
feel,
but
no.
Like, but there is an incredible movie that I loved and still love. And I was just seeing all these men directing, which was great. And I loved a lot of them. They were fantastic. Yeah. But then seeing a movie that I loved so much.
Yeah.
And it was like directed Catherine Hardwick. You're like,
well, it's like your first feature. Holly Hunter gets nominated for Oscar. You guys were on Oprah. It was huge deal.
Golden Globes.
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing.
I just remember it just blew up. Like it was, and it was just such
As a teenage girl loving that movie and wanting to be in film, it was very, it was monumental for me, if I speak personally, because. Mm. And it really made me realize, oh, like, we can do this. It's and possible. Not to mention, I don't want to speak for you on this case, but the fact that it was written by
a 13-year-old.
Because we have, I like to direct and produce, and she's a writer. Mm-hmm. So that this movie kind of is a really incredible symbol for us because it was written by Nikki Reed. Like,
yeah, Nikki and I wrote it together.
Yeah. Right, like it's incredible.
That's pretty amazing. I can't believe that more people actually haven't done it since because it was incredible writing with her.
So is that something, I know, that I want you to tell a bit more about the story about you and Nikki, but I want to also hear, while you tell this story, how you guys kind of decided, well, this is going to be my first directing credit.
Okay, well, that's not what I decided.
Okay. how did that come up?
Trying so hard before that.
Okay,
fair. I had written numerous screenplays.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was running up against some, you know, male glass ceiling, whatever, too. You know, because I had written a screenplay, and then I would go and, you know, I'd research it and build a Civil War tent about a girl that was for real, fought on the American side, on the northern side during the Civil War, disguised as a man. Okay, great story. I built a Civil War tent in my living room, shot short films, went to the Civil War reenactment, did the whole but storyboard everything, wrote the screen, optioned it to a Canadian actor, you know, optioned it, this, that, the other, you know, but no, I couldn't get it budgeted. It's $9 million, can't get it made. For your first movie, you can't get $9 million. I'm like,
$9 million,
Let me just say this. I mean, back then, that wasn't that much. People were making movies. But I said, I've worked on, like, with 10 first-time directors, 5 first-time directors. They got more than $9 million. They were all guys, pretty much. Then I'm like, okay, so I'll write a cheaper one. I write one, $5 million, you know, da-da-da-da, budget it out, da-da-da-da. Nope, you know, that's too much for your first movie. I'm like, what does it take? Then I look at two of my, you know, idols, I guess, that I'd work with, David O. Russell and Richard Linklater, in their first movies. Richard's was 7,000 slacker, and David's was Banking the Monkey, like 70,000. I'm like, well, I got to write something I can make no matter what. Nobody can stop me.
Yeah.
And so so I had that in my mind. I was trying to think, what could that be? A, it's got to be about poor people because we can't afford fancy clothes or fancy cars or fancy houses. I got to be able to shoot it like in my own house, that kind of thing. And then what started happening, when I was in Vancouver on a movie, for 6 months I was gone. I came back to LA, and Nikki had changed. I had known Nikki since she was 5 years old. She had changed completely from the cute little girl in overalls running, climbing up trees and everything, being fun, very creative. She had suddenly now become like, woke up at 4:30 every morning, did 2 hours of hair and makeup, 2 to 3 hours of hair and makeup, had to look just like J-Lo, kind of, this, that. And I was like, she hated her mom, she hated her dad, she hated her brother, she hated everybody. She didn't really hate me because I was just kind of like the weird aunt, or, you know, I wasn't related to her, I was a friend. So I'm like, wow. And they couldn't afford any counseling for her. And none of us had money, what a therapist is like $250 an hour or something like that, and that doesn't fix you. And $250, no, you're not fixed. So, I guess I thought, well, maybe I can try to help. And you know, I took her to teach her to surf or to, you know, draw and you know, go to museums and stuff. She goes, well, this is really what you like to do, Catherine. That's not really what I like to do. I want to be an actor, and I'm like, ooh, that's going to make her even more concerned about her appearance and more freaky. So I kind of got nervous. But, you know, you don't say to a kid, no, that's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
No, you say yes, and let me help you. Yes, and. Yeah. So I thought, okay, yeah, let me take you to some acting classes. Then I realized the acting classes are too sophisticated. They're like either they're a little kid, like how do you brush your teeth and do a toothpaste commercial, or they're like adulterous, you know, stories or whatever.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, this isn't going to work. I'm like, well, we're going to just have to write our own screenplay, you know, and you're going to star in it and I'm going to direct it. And she's like, okay. And I said, we'll make a teen comedy, you know, ha ha ha.
A comedy.
That's what I thought. It's going to be just a fun teen comedy. And so, and by the way, I had another little friend, a 13-year-old that was a friend's daughter, same age. I was teaching a little bit at her school. And so, and both of the girls would have summer parties here and knew each other. So I was talking to a lot of their moms, their teachers, and them, and just watching all the stuff they were going through.
Yeah.
So I said, Nikki, you know, when we're writing this, we've got to write it, you know, from real stuff. It's got to be grounded. The comedy has to come from real stuff you're going through. And we're like, okay. Then one day we were driving right down the street right near here, and I just went, we're trying too hard to make it a comedy. Let's just write about what you're really going through. Let's just write a real story.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, done.
Yeah.
Shake hands. I got her to sign a thing. Nobody and her parents and everybody that we could do it. And, you know, that they would give me the rights. Of course, I'd never directed a movie. Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. It's never going to happen.
Yeah. Right?
She'd never acted. It's never going to happen. But it did happen. You know, and basically, we busted butt. I mean, the way we did it was at the house next door, and she had 6 days between Christmas holiday and New Year's going back to school, and she and her mother were fighting like crazy. And they said, why don't you get Nikki? Maybe she can stay with you for this week. I go, okay, Nikki, why don't we just write the screenplay, have a deadline. At the end of 6 days, we're going to have it done. And she's like, okay. But I'd been thinking about it, and I'd been observing the moms, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, we stood up. We never sat down. We acted out everything. What would you say? And so I played her mom. I played her friend. I played the boyfriend. She played herself, which was Evan's part. And I'd say, what would you do? Let's say you're up there, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then we would just act out the scene, da-da-da-da. And we'd yell at each other or laugh with each other. Then I'd just go type it in. Okay, now what would you do here? And at the end of 6 days, we had the movie, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to the beginning, the middle, and end. But she went back to middle school, which is kind of crazy, back to middle school. And I read it, and I'm like, oh, the mother is not cool. Because she really saw her mother as just a villain, like one-dimensional villain or something.
Yeah.
So I went over to Cheryl's, her mom's, and hung out there a couple more days, asked her a bunch of questions, acted out scenes with her. I made the mom
a little bit more
a real human.
Yeah.
And then that was it, you know. That was
that's
the
so like, it's I just remember watching and still when I watch it, it's like I didn't ever really go through as a teenager that I mean I was definitely an asshole to my parents, but I didn't go through that like severe rebellion where I didn't go through the same things, but it doesn't matter. It's the most relatable movie as a theme, like how you feel about your parents a lot of the time.
The early 2000s were very like Hilary Duff, which we loved that stuff, like Lindsay Lohan, Hilary Duff, like whatever, Lizzie McGuire, all that stuff. But it felt like when 13 came out, it was like somebody is taking us seriously as like real people. And I, you know, I was quite innocent myself, but it was refreshing to be like, somebody understands. I could see those characters in people in my class who didn't relate to Lizzie McGuire.
100%.
Yeah, and it was like,
yeah, it was incredible. So thank you for bringing that.
Oh, thank you. That's what I think what blew people's mind. You didn't see that on camera.
Yeah.
I tried to make it like just as if I would, when I was over at Nikki's house or my other friend Sarah's house, just the shit that I really saw. You know, like I would sit there with my little video camera like, oh my God, oh my God, did she just say that to her mother? I'd go chase that one. And then I really wanted that same energy in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I have a daughter who's 10 months, so she's not talking back just yet. But when I watch something like 13, or there was somebody recently, I can't think of the top of my head who it was, but who was talking about their teenage daughter. And I was like, oh God, this is what I have to look forward to. But also, I'm so excited for that. Yeah. Like for that, I don't want her to, you know, be horrible to me. I don't want to be horrible to her. I don't want to fight. But
kind of inevitable.
It's going to happen, right? And
she's got to grow.
Yeah, yeah, and of course. And seeing it reflected in some sort of, because as you said, to Hillary, we love Hillary Duff.
Yeah.
Hillary, come on. Like, we love Hillary. She's our queen. But those movies are very cookie cutter and amazing.
Fun.
Yeah.
They're great. They're fantastic. But this was a complete, I actually, now that you're kind of, you're refreshing my memory when you're talking about when it came out with the trailers and stuff, that I remember being like, because I was so used to watching, we're saying Hilary Duff over and over again, but that's
fun.
Yeah, we were used to that, and then it was 13, and it was raw, and and I remember being like, "This isn't for me to watch," but then you watch it, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is for me to watch," and it was a whole new experience. And then, of course, again, personally, it was a whole new experience because I saw a female director and all that stuff. But it was pretty huge for our, like we said, we were 13 when 13 came out.
I ended up watching it in this boy, his name was Jordan. I watched it in his parents' garage on this little TV. We like somehow rented it. It's rated R for sure. We somehow rented it and then we like snuck it into his garage. And there was like six of us who like huddled around and were like, we're watching 13. Like it was such a I don't know what the word is, but like such
subversive.
I just remember that moment so clearly because we were all experiencing it together. You know, people don't really have that as much anymore with watching movies. Like,
no, not so much. Oh, did you watch that thing on Netflix? Yeah, let's talk about it, but you didn't watch it.
But I just, because our time is quickly going, and so I want to get to Lords of Dogtown and Twilight and stuff too. So
I just want to talk about 13 forever because it's just so good. But yes, we should move to the next.
The last time I saw you, we talked about Lords of Dogtown, and you mentioned something to me that's stayed with me. You were talking about Heath Ledger's scene in the movie where he's like shaving the surfboard with the Maggie May song, and how like special that scene was.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something. You said we added a word in the scene that made the scene, like, elevated the scene.
Right.
And so we rewatched, and we were so curious what that word is.
Did you figure out the word?
Well,
we don't know, but
we thought it might be used.
No, it was boss.
When he says boss.
We didn't have that. Oh, the kid will be surfing by Sunday or whatever. The kid will be surfing by Sunday, boss. And the boss just made it be like his status had changed.
Yeah.
He used to be the boss. He used to own the shop.
The
punk kid that came in there that he kicked out earlier is the boss.
I was watching the article that I was reading. I can't remember where I read the article, so I apologize that I'm not giving it the credit. But it was saying how it touched on that about the drinking when he's drinking that. And we saw when he says the word used with the song and he looks back at them. And it's also, I think, a very heartbreaking scene in a lot of ways, especially with the reality
of course. Watch it. Like, you're kind of like, don't.
Yeah, you're like, no, don't do it.
But the reason I mentioned about the boss was because when you do a scene and then Heath adds so much to it, then he would give me an idea, then I would add something.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a lot of like creative building blocks that's adding so awesome. To each other. So that's, you know, I added the boss, and then I think that added one more little layer, he now had to call that guy boss, you know, but he did, and he accepted it, and he's over there, and the real Skip is still working at a shop shaping boards to this day, you know.
Is he a friend, or?
Well, we got to be good friends at the time. I haven't seen him that much since.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him at the premiere, you know, whenever I can, but he's a lovely person. He let Heath wear his actual blue snakeskin, elk skin suit with the rhinestones that he wears in the kind of party scene. Yeah. That was the real Skip. That was super cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And you bring out such great performances and people that maybe aren't taken seriously initially, you know, because Heath at the time, I think he was a teen heartthrob with 10 Things I Hate About You and Knight's Tale. And I think Lords of Dogtown is the first time I can remember being like,
that's a good point.
He's a good actor.
Yeah, and amazing.
Then, and then the amazing thing is, like, literally 6 days after he wrapped his scene on Lords of Dogtown, he was shooting Brokeback Mountain.
Whoa.
And so, like, to me, I watch Brokeback Mountain, I go, oh, my God, that guy must have, you would have thought that he'd been there for 2 months learning how to ride, hanging out with it. No, he was with us. Playing a totally different character 6 days
before. Yeah. I can't, look, I he could never.
He is a transformational, you know. He just
you know what, though? Now that you say that, they sort of had a similar voice.
Oh, the different accent? Well, not Australian.
But he had that, like, sort of slurry. Anyways, a little bit. Yeah.
He does change his voice and his posture changes.
Yeah. It's, you do bring out, like, some really incredible. Yeah, Emile discovered Hirsch. A ton of people. Like, I mean, not to go back to 13 because we won't go there, but like Nikki Reed, Heath Ledger, not that you discovered, but like that this new.
Yeah, Emile Hirsch, too.
Emile Hirsch. I mean, we can go on to Kristen Stewart if we want. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that.
Oscar Isaac's, his first movie is Nativity.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. You really did. Oh, my God.
Crazy. That's cool.
And if you look at Lords of Dogtown, it's so funny. It's like you've got Sofia Vergara.
Yeah.
Before anyone heard.
Yeah.
Or you've got America Ferrara. You've got like all these.
Oh, God. I forgot.
People.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's oh, so my God. Fun. That movie.
It's amazing.
And you have Jeremy Renner in it.
Yeah.
That then did Hurt Locker and then The Bourne Identity.
Yeah.
And he's got a little part as a druggy skateboard guy.
Right.
It's so
so good.
Fun to look back and
I love
Vanessa
watching
Vanessa Hudgens in 13.
Yes, yeah. I remember when they're on the lawn.
Yeah.
It's so, I love seeing movies when you find someone like that.
They have a little secret thing in the.
What's
wait.
That?
It's
all right. Can we do a break?
Yeah,
of course.
Sure. Okay, we're back.
We'll, you're recording now?
Yes, I'm recording. So I did want you to retell the Sean Penn story, but I will go back unless you want to retell it. It's because I can't remember. Something about Michael.
Should I tell it?
Please. Yeah.
So I did Lords of Dogtown, and then Sean Penn did the voiceover, the narration for the original documentary, you know, Dogtown and Z-Boys.
Yeah.
So we wanted him to be in this eco-activist film, and somehow I got to fly up to San Francisco to George Lucas's ranch and show Sean the screening of Lords of Dogtown because I wanted to try to get him to do another movie, but he wanted to see it because he loved skateboarding and his son was a big skateboarder. So the son got to bring a bunch of friends and we watched the movie Lords of Dogtown. At the very end, he goes, wow, he goes, you know, Heath Ledger's great and blah, 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 but that kid is amazing. Let's call him right now. Oh my God, I bet Emil will flip out. Sean Penn is going to call him. So I go, Emil, somebody wants to talk to you. Boom, Sean Penn, right? And they started talking, and then he cast him into the wild, you know, because he really loved him in that project. So he cast him into the wild, and I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And I went to, they invited me to an early test screening of Into the Wild. So I went to the Paramount lot, watched it, and I see Kristen sitting in the trailer with Emil. She's got this longing, this crush on him. I'm like, she's got to be Bella. Yeah. So he saw in my movie the star, the person that should be in Into the Wild. I saw in his movie the person that should be in Twilight.
So you had, at that point when you met Kristen, you had Twilight, the project.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, I,
but you hadn't cast, obviously. Had,
I knew that we were doing Twilight. Right. We were looking for the... for Bella. And so when I went over there and saw that screening, I said, that's got to be Bella.
Oh, wow. That is amazing.
Then I met her after that,
too. Oh, yeah. I see. Okay,
then
okay.
Then I said to the my boss as a producer, so I said, I think that girl, Kristen Stewart, is perfect for this. But she was on a movie in Pittsburgh. I said, I need to fly over there. I got to meet her in person. Yeah. I need to take a guy with me. I need to see if she can improv and play, because I've only seen that one scene, but I think she's perfect. Of course, she'd been in Panic Room, but that was when she was more like 11-year-old kid or whatever. Yeah. So they let me go there. And then, we played and did all these scenes for 2 or 3 hours, and I'm like, it's got to be Kristen.
Yeah. You know, well, you were right.
Yeah. She's so good, and she did not overact, and people didn't know her very well, so she could be Bella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she wasn't somebody, if it was Lindsay or somebody that we already knew, it's like, oh, we already know that person.
Yeah. No, it's good. It was perfect. I mean, I can't imagine anyone else being Bella. Yeah. Or anyone else in that movie, truthfully. Like,
I was going to ask something that I just dropped out of my mind. But I did... Oh, I was going to say, I remember watching, when I was like 18, when the movie came out, I was watching an interview with Kristen. I remember she was so pissed that you weren't directing the second one. Like, you could tell in the interview that she was just not having it. Because she just loved you so much.
Well, it was tough, but I didn't think... I didn't feel the second one so much. You know, I felt like the first book was the pure... idea that Stephanie wrote, and then the second book I didn't get as captivated by it.
Right.
You know, I'm not that much of a sequel person, you know, and everything. I like the first thing.
Yeah. The origin story.
Sure.
Yeah,
and then I also read, like, basically every single actor out there read for Edward. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard, I mean, who are you gonna find it? You know, when you read the book, like, how can you live up to that? So every actor read, and then, you know, a lot of them were just like, super cute guy, but they look like the cute dude next door.
Yeah.
Like nothing magical or 100 years old or
serial.
Special or dangerous. They just seem like the dude in your high school, the cute guy in your high school. I'm like, this is not having the quality that we need to take it to the next level. So, so then I remember talking to Rob on the phone. He was in London. I said, we don't have money to fly you out here. It's not a big budget movie or anything, but, you know, can you put yourself on tape? And he didn't like what he put on tape.
Yeah.
Right. So he didn't send it to me. I go, well, I mean, we're doing, like, a round of people at my house next door. We're going to have, you know, four or five guys with Kristen.
Yeah.
So you could come to that. And he decided to pay his own plane ticket and sleep on his agent Stephanie's couch.
Oh, my God.
And then he slept on the couch. He came to that thing. And then, of course, we're just like, I mean, you could see the sparks between Kristen.
Yeah.
They were just, it was like electricity.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, all these stories are just, it's just so cool.
I mean, it's all a bunch of iconic discoveries, like the Kristen and Rob, everyone we've already listed. It's just, it's pretty wild.
I was just gonna say, and then at the time you became the highest grossing female director.
Yeah, which was very surprising to everybody. Even now, you know, you look, okay, what we spent on the movie and what we spent to market it, you know, was still pretty remarkable.
Right.
Whereas, you know, obviously Barbie, amazing, Wonder Woman, but they had mega budgets and mega campaigns, and they're awesome. But this was kind of like the little scrappy one.
That's what I just love about your movies, is they feel indie, they feel authentic to whatever the story is. Like, they don't feel like the studio is super involved, if that makes any sense.
And the studio trusted me, I guess. But I think if they knew it could have been a big blockbuster, they probably would have hired a guy. I mean, let's be honest, because there had never been a woman directing something that turned into like a blockbuster like that before.
Wow.
So they probably wouldn't have hired me.
Right.
So it's better, I think, for me and everybody that we I got to just make it when it was kind of more under the radar. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So because they said to me, I think about 3 weeks before we started shooting, they said, I said, you know, I think it's going to do pretty well. Well, look, all these people online, it might just be 300 girls in Salt Lake City. I'm like,
not exactly.
300 girls in Salt Lake City. They are pretty active.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Well, we actually were staying with somebody who... our friend Bonnie Zane, and her daughter is 18. And we were talking, we said, oh yeah, because they know about the podcast. And we said, we're actually meeting Catherine Hardwick. And Lily, the daughter, went, oh my God, Twilight. Yeah. And she was like, it's my favorite. Like, she just went absolutely wild. Yeah. And she was, how old?
She was four when it came out.
When it came out. And she's like, she was just absolutely, and they live in LA. They're very, used to, her mom's a casting director, like they're very used to,
oh, so they know.
You know, they're not the yeah they're not, it's not a, I'm not saying it's nothing, but then, yeah, but when she heard your name, she just about shot out the roof. And yeah, I was like, I was like,
we tried to find something for you to sign.
Yeah, because, we were like, we gotta get something for her to sign for her, yeah, because it's just like,
I probably have a little poster. Yeah, that would
just
be amazing.
It would, she was so excited. And it was just so, what I, the reason I'm bringing it up is it's still to this day, I mean, Twilight obviously is still a very influential and big movie, but there's people who were barely alive when it came out and they're still like, oh my God. And that's, I want to say,
same with 13.
13. That's yeah. Like, it's still something, Lords of Dogtown, that are like influencing people. That like, it's
that,
just.
Because there's not that many movies like
13. It's yeah. not.
There's still yeah. not many movies like 13.
Absolutely yeah. not.
Catherine, last question for you. What is your favorite teen movie?
That's a hard one. I mean, oh my God. Well, of course, for me, it's kind of my favorite movie too, is 13, just because mm-hmm. I wrote it with a 13.
Yeah.
It has that authenticity. I think Evan and Nikki
yep.
just, you know, pour, and Holly, of course, just poured their hearts into it in an incredible way that,
yep.
you know, it makes it live on.
Yeah.
We just saw it at the American Cinematheque.
Yeah.
They had an anniversary screening, and you know, like, people are crying. You know, you, yeah. when you put that much heart into your performance,
yeah.
it lasts, you know.
Yeah.
So for the authenticity, you know, badass, radical, rip
yeah.
your heart out would be 13.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's some really super fun ones that would be
no, that's okay.
fun one.
Yeah, the we fun don't need a fun answer. It's okay. It's that's a great
you know
answer.
What? That's the correct answer.
Yeah.
So thank you. Honestly, thank you so much. I know we went over a little bit, but thank you for being so generous.
It's hard not to. Like, it's like, I hear about it all day. But
you honestly inspire us so much, and we really thank you for inviting us over.
You're so nice. Thank you.
Well, thank you for welcoming us into your office, into your space, into your museum.
Take a picture of you guys.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay, goodbye.
And thank you to Eric and Kevin Smale for our theme song. And
see you later, guys.
See you later.
Goodbye.